Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry. Joining me today, we've got Max and we've got Terry. Max, it's been a while. Welcome back, man.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Yeah. I'm a fan of your flowers.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. This is a very awkward house to accommodate for recording, so I've had to make do with what I've got. Sorry. You know, have editors, have fun with the green screen. Do what you like. I'll be eager to see what you can come up with.
So I would explain to people listening via podcast what we're talking about, but I think Max just told you. Flowers in this green behind him. Yeah. Yeah. I am clearly not in my normal recording space. I am actually at North Myrtle Beach on the coast with my entire family, who is all somewhere in this space somewhere. So, people who are watching, you may randomly see a child walking past looking lost and confused. That may happen. Or, yeah, or you could hear people playing in the back. Yeah, I'm just saying, just pretend like it's the way it normally is. I wish it was like, you know, when Tom was in Wales and you could hear the seagulls, you know, but here, if I opened the, you'd hear nothing but wind. You know what I mean? It would just sound like a bad recording. All right, so we decided to, on a nice, light intro topic, or it's light for some. It's light for us, I think. Squad numbers. Squad numbers were released. I know a lot of people were clamoring to make this happen a little earlier. Terry, anything stood out for you where you're thinking, hey, I like that, or I don't care?
Oh, no, I care a great deal about squad numbers. I'm part of that generation that, like these early 2000s where squad numbers mean the world. Yeah, there was a couple of nice ones in there. Like, I'm really glad Richarlison's gone to number 7 from 30. I'm actually, in a twist of fate, really glad that Moyes Keane didn't get number 9, because that would have, I think, heaped unnecessary extra pressure on him, because he's already got it on being the new star man. To be the number 9 as well, I think a certain expectation of style comes with that. Yeah, I don't think it should, but it does. Wish he'd got a slightly better number than 27. I'm not a fan of that. Like, I would prefer to see him be, what was he at Juventus, 18? I would have liked him to have 17, but that's gone to a Iwobi. Something better than 27.
Yeah. 17 for me, it'd be like reminiscent of when Lukaku first arrived, so that would have been nice, but they missed that touch.
So you guys don't like these addition type numbers where they're all about the maths? It's like, look, 2 + 7 = 9. That's why I got 27. You know what I mean? Because I feel like that's what they do often. You know, that's my replacement.
No, I'm not a fan of that, to be honest.
Not your thing, guys.
it's like a very South American thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I believe that Richarlison was number 30 originally. I'm sure I read that because he wanted to be 70, but the Premier League wouldn't allow it. I don't know why he'd want to be number. Yeah, but that's what he was in South America. He wasn't that at Watford, but he tried to be here. And I'm sure that like 7 was available the summer he arrived. So I just don't know what's going on there. But he's got a better number now. And, you know, hopefully, you know, he's better than some of the more recent number 7s we've had, which are like Balassi and McGeezy. And, you know, I've heard people say this number 7's cursed. Surely it can't be anymore with Richarlison.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, it's just for me in particular, my generation, that it always seemed to be the Brazilians to take up good number branding. He had, you know, El Fenomeno, R9 for Ronaldo, and then R10. Mm. I remember when I was a kid getting loads of R10 gear, the Ronaldinho stuff, playing like boots and that. So, yeah, DCL getting number 9, you know, that's the number 9's a fascinating number of recent years for Everton, isn't it? But hopefully you can break the curse, so to speak.
I'm always amazed by the I know it's just, he's maintained the same number this year, but he is a clear starter this year at Yerry Mina, but being number 13. That's always did you guys ever is there a story with that, or is he just like, this is just what I like?
I think there is a story behind it. Obviously, for me, on a personal level, I've got to give a shout out to Michael Keane moving to number 5. I was mentioning to Teddy then off camera that I've got number 5 in my sleeve. a number tattoo, the number that my granddad used to play as, and I played with it when I played. So seeing a centre half go to number 5, it was nice. But yeah, Yerry Mina really should have took up number 4 to, I don't know, give that level of satisfaction to the 1 to 11 crew. But
Yerry Mina's number 3 at Columbia as well, even when it's everyone else's 1 to 11. So he must have some connection to number 13. So he's requested that. In fact, I'm sure Joe Virginia was 13 the summer that he arrived, and then Mina in the same summer came in, and Virginia had to give it up straight away because Mina requested specifically to have 13, and obviously big, you know, £30 million signing is going to pull rank over like a, you know, a reserve goalkeeper. Just speaking of that, the number on the sleeve tattoo, Bernard's got the number 20 in his sleeve tattoo, and that's his squad number, isn't it? I've always noticed that. Mm-hmm. He's got by his wrist number 20. The only thing, the other thing that I didn't like about the numbers was I'm not speaking to JP Gabamon at all, because he's a defensive midfielder and he's got pick number 25 when number 6 and number 4 are both available. What is his problem? I feel like it's done to annoy me specifically. It's like 25 and there's 4 and 6 available. And you're a whole midfielder / centre back. Either of them would have been perfect for him. What's he doing?
I'm somewhat used to it. After having Fellaini, it doesn't look out of place seeing a central midfielder wearing number 25. But I'd like to echo the same tone towards Alex Iwobi. Like, I've had conversations with you too. I want Alex Iwobi to prove me wrong. Let's put it that way. I wish him all the best. I hope he performs well. But that number 17 for me, it's kind of sacred. Like, you've got obviously Tim Cahill. You've got Romelu Lukaku when he first came, and then you've got Idrissa Gueye, three absolutely fantastic players. And, you know, to me, that's a bar to live up to.
I mean, if he carries on the streak, he'll be great then, won't he? Because every single previous incumbent was great. But I go far back enough to remember the one before Tim Cahill was, I'm sure, Scott Gemmell. So, what else? There was another player. I can't remember who it was, though. Who's got a weird number.
Morales has been shifted, which I think's odd.
Which?
Morales.
Oh, no, he's been bumped with a crap number because he's going, basically.
The 30s.
Yeah. You can tell who's even, like, you know, like, Balassi, Morales, Martina, Nias have all just given high numbers that they didn't previously. It was like, yeah, let's just drive home the point again. That you're not welcome and you're not going to stay. But you say you were a bit gutted about Iwobi getting 17. Nothing will ever ruin a new transfer, quite like when Schneiderlin signed and he had number 2. It ruined the whole transfer. I was angry. It was just like, no, send him back. I don't want him anymore because he's a centre midfielder at number 2. The full-back numbers are the only numbers that you can't really, you know, get away with. I was terrified that Aruna Kone was going to be number 2 when he came to Everton. Because that's what he was at Wigan. I was like, if we've ever got a striker who's number 2, I'll stop supporting the club because that is ridiculous.
The other big one from this summer that we forgot to mention is the switchover between Gomez and Delph, which I know quite a few people weren't too happy with Gomez changing from the number 8, but there was a personal reason behind that, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. And I was kind of annoyed because 8 has always been my favorite number. And Gomez is a hell of a player. And so the idea of, you know, I like Delph. Delph's fine. But the idea of our number 8 possibly not starting a decent amount of games this season, because you have no idea the combinations that Silva's going to use, that just annoys me. You know what I mean? I'm just kind of like, I want to be able to have that number 8 be a player where I'm just like, yes, yes. You know, one day I'll get that. No, it's, yeah. That one annoyed me a little bit, but I do sort of like the whole, like, Everton players being able to kind of take the ones they want, though. You know what I mean? They're just kind of, it's very, like, it's relaxed. And it's very, like, hey, Terry, what are you going to do about it?
The only one I'm gutted about more, like, to a proper degree is Moise Keane. He could have had any number. Why has he got 27? I don't care if it's personal. I've said no.
Is there a gap between, like, is it 15 and 16? Like, there's no, we don't have a 15 or 16 right now. Is that right?
No, we don't. Sylvain Distant ever since he's left. No one took it up. Have they all cleverly?
Yeah, I mean, 15's not really a good number anyway. 16's not bad. 16 tends to be like centre midfielder. James McCarthy was 16. Forget who it was before him. I'm sure Graveson was 16.
Possibly.
Jack Yelka, though, as well. He was 16 for a season before he got number 6.
Yeah.
I always quite liked the number 23 and 32 because they were David Beckham's numbers at Madrid and Milan. We always thought they were quite cool, but we've not got anyone senior neither of those. Oh, no, we have got 23.
Coleman,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, captain, my captain.
You got to get up on your desk.
This is the podcast section, Jerry. Tell the people that I am on the desk.
Terry is on his desk. There is no controlling this guy. I have to say this because it's not even a segue. It has nothing to do with anything, but only because we've got to finish the numbers section and move on. But there is this commercial that I found for a Mexican restaurant, all right, that basically it just breaks every copyright code for Marvel. It's ridiculous, but it's Thanos talking about how he's like, yo soy inevitable or something. He's basically saying it in Spanish, and he snaps, and then all of a sudden this owner of this Mexican restaurant comes up and they do all these close-ups of like Mexican food, and it has this animated Thanos like squatting and like looking around. Like, it's the best commercial I've ever seen, and I'm gonna send it to you soon. Okay, and it's got this bizarre like slow like salsa beat to the Avengers theme, and I've never seen anything like it. So yeah, now that I've gone just stream of consciousness tangential conversation. This is what you have in store for you on today's show. We are starting with Palace Thoughts. We've been very careful not to bring any in to this opening, into our opening section, but we have some thoughts, at least 3 thoughts. Then we're going to talk about squad assessment. How deep are we? How shallow are we? How thin? Where are the problem areas? Where are the areas of strength? And then we'll finish with, if you know your history, the Everton-based quiz segment that Max named many moons ago. Let's get started with our Palace thoughts. For a 0-0 draw, it actually was, there were some chances. It wasn't the total, like, you know, snooze fest that many were expecting when they saw it. Like, I saw it after the fact because my oldest had a Latino League Championship game in which the trophy was as big as my child. Okay, Latino leagues do not play around with their trophies. I'll post a picture at some point. It's insane. But I got to watch it, and there's a lot of chances. Actually, decently entertaining game. Very, very wind. Okay? Very wind. But honestly, when I was watching it, I think the big thing was the injury to Andre that changed some things. I'm going to start with Max this time because, well, Terry's been here for a while and Max just hasn't been here for a while, and I'm trying to be polite. So Max, give us some opening thoughts. Don't blab all your thoughts just yet, but give me some good stuff to start
us off. I'll try my hardest, but I saw like a little clickbait match reports about how Palace were held by 10 men ever, and I don't think that was the case. Like, from a statistical point of view, it was dominant from us. There were just many examples of not putting clear goal scoring opportunities away, like from the off Sigurdsson in the second minute, that should be in the back of the net. There are a few other chances as well. Coleman, I think that was later on around the 30th minute mark again. But you know, you have from the perspective of looking at the entirety of the performance, although, yeah, that was the big turning point, Andre Gomez getting injured, unfortunately, going down to the 10 men. Both Palace and Everton finished the last season just gone relatively strongly. I think they got, like, 5 wins in the last 8 between them. So, mm-hmm. You know, omitting pre-season, because I don't think Everton were all that great in pre-season, you know, you were expecting quite a good game, like coming up against Everton. I think Palace, you know, succumb and accept the fact that they are going to be the defensive side, that they are going to have to present the little block, and that's always a feature of Crystal Palace when we come up against them, I feel. I don't know if you guys saw David's thread on the similarities between this game and the last time we played Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park in April, but it was spooky. It was really spooky how like similar the two games were. I almost thought it was similar of Everton in how we played in that. Again, similar to last season, we're trying to bed these new signings in, and you know we're not all there yet. But you know we look out from the 17-18 season where it was just like a nightmare, and watching the football was like a chore. You know, we've got a clear attacking identity, and that was really nice to see, particularly down that left hand side. The, you know, high pressing fullbacks, and yeah, hopefully there's more to come.
All right. Good start, Max. Well done. Welcome back. So Terry, what do you want to start with?
I mean, I can definitely believe the threads from David about like the similarities from the last away match at Crystal Palace, because when I was watching it, I felt like someone had just put the video on of the last season's match, because it was almost exactly the same. And it's the same problem we had with a lot of away games at these, you know, smaller clubs, these like lesser teams, is that we had absolutely loads of the ball, ran the game possession wise, you know, passes completed, all that through the roof, but not very many, you know, clear cut chances. And that's where we struggled last season towards the end as well, that when the teams that want to play and open up and attack you, like Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, the better teams, we did better because we got to a counter-attack a little bit more. We got more space for our forwards to run into. When we're facing like a low block, who are happy to try and break on us, we're a little bit blunt because Calvert-Lewin is not a natural goal scorer. He's a good tool to use against certain teams, but he's not a box predator. He's not going to finish, you know, all of his chances. So if Sigurdsson is in the sort of mood that he was in on Saturday, where he is going to miss really gilt-edged chances like that, then we're going to struggle to score. Bernard, similarly, had a pretty poor game on the finishing front. He wasn't. It was one where he cuts in, and he just needs to unleash it and send it off his laces, and he tries a little reverse pass to Dean, who has stopped running because he thinks that Bernard's going to take a shot at goal, and because to all the world he should have. That is hopefully something that we iron out a little bit. You know, this sort of lack of sort of ability to break these teams down. Now, the new players we've brought in, none of them really stand out as, oh, these are going to break down, like, you know, defensive teams. Like, Moise Keane is a good striker, but he's not going to be somebody who's going to take the ball and, you know, break through two lines of defence. Iwobi might be a different option, because whilst he's not got the talent of Sigurdsson in some respects, he does create a lot of chances. He moves past the striker a lot more than Sigurdsson does. So that could be the thinking that the club have had with signing Iwobi, that he's going to be better in those games than some of the players we've got now. But it's just a scruffy game, same as the one last season. Lots of possession, lots of good passing, at least while Gomez was on the pitch. Not very much in the way of entertainment and clear-cut chances. Palace did their job on us. They will have seen this game, especially when they didn't have Saha from the start, and said, right, we're going to have to just be, you know, disciplined and try and, you know, get some change out of Everton at the back. And they never got it because, Mina and Keane were excellent. But they wouldn't have came into this game with any intention of opening up and having a, you know, going toe-to-toe with us, and they didn't, and, you know, fair play to them. In their position, anyone would have done it.
Yeah, the Andre Gomes, I just feel like I still need to say Andre Gomes, sorry. But Andre Gomes' injury was big. And it was, you know, I felt like he was doing a good job. He was actually pushing us forward a little bit more. I feel like it seems pretty clear all of our creativity almost always comes from the flanks, comes from the sides. We need to start figuring out a way to be able to attack through the center some, to be able to attack through the middle some, just to give us some variety, just to kind of make us a little less predictable. And I think that what you just said, Terry, talking about thoughts on Iwobi, I think that is going to give us a little more creativity coming from the middle. You know, I think also that was one of the things when we were thinking about signing Decore, the idea that he carries the ball like that and pushes the ball forward like that. I think that was one of our thoughts on that one. Man of the match for me, I will say our entire back line and our keeper played well.
Yerry Mina for me.
Played well. Yerry Mina's my guy, though.
And Jordan Pickford, too. I think what I've got to mention as well is the importance of Jordan Pickford was kind of reinforced in this game. Like, he was forced to make some brilliant 1v1 saves and just reinforced the fact that he is the best goalkeeper in the country.
And he had not had to make any saves until then. That's, to me, like, that's a concentration thing. And that's that part of the keeper position that people don't understand. The idea of just not having to do anything for 60 minutes and then all of a sudden you've got you got to make that, and you got to be mentally, just on the edge. And he was awesome. Mm-hmm. Those saves that were back to back, very close. It was nice. Yerry Mina's still my guy. I thought Big Gerald did a fine job, and kind of chilled people out a little bit in terms of getting worried that we don't have two starters. He was really good one-on-one defending as well. Whenever he went toe-to-toe and people were coming at him to try to beat him, and he shut him down.
Mm.
It was impressive. We knew he was going to be good in the air. I loved seeing him body up Benteke.
Bounce Benteke. Yeah, that was quite satisfying.
Yeah. I love that. He wasn't the only one in the back line to play well, but he's – and to be fair, Terry's been singing Yerry Mina's praises for a long time now, waiting for him to come good. So, Terry, speak your piece. Is he your guy for man of the match?
Yeah, I mean, as Max said, Jordan Pickford, had two massive moments as well, so you've got to consider him. But I don't think there should have been any doubts at all about Yerry Mina's quality going into the season. His fitness, absolutely, because, he did a lot last season. So there's always that worry that, he could break down. He's susceptible to getting, muscle injuries and stuff. Hopefully, not. Touch wood, because we're now in a position where we need to, have them both fit and healthy for at least till January. But I've always thought he was a good defender. I mean, he's a little bit rash. Like, he needs to work a little bit on the decision-making, because he's always, I think, a red card risk, especially in the more, feisty games where there's, some running battles going on. I do worry on that side of it. Pure ability wise, I think he's a great centre back, and you guys need to trust me. You furrowed your brows when I said about Michael Keane after the 17-18 season. You thought I was crazy, and now here we are. And just listen to me again. Mina and Keane are a good pair together. I would have liked Zuma as well, but Zuma, remember, was brought in to be cover for that partnership. And Zuma obviously established himself when Mina kept getting injured, but Mina was brought in to be Michael Keane's partner, and we're seeing it now a year late.
Yeah.
A big, stinky, I told you so from Terry.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there we go. That's I do have, like you said, fitness, durability concerns. He just kind of looks the way he's built. You're constantly worried when he goes into a tackle, because he's just, there's something about the way he's built. He's tall and thin, just going to be concerned about that for a while. Hope that's not an issue though. I honestly, people who didn't have their best game, I thought Sigurdsson, was pretty wasteful in possession, missed a few chances. I think two in particular that I'm thinking of in the first half. He did the work. He always does the work. His pressing work's always good. You never have a day where you're like, Sigurdsson didn't work hard. No, he just, he seemed a little sloppy for a player who's usually, I think, a little more tidy. And let's just agree that Schneiderlin overreacted, despite the fact that may not have been a foul. The overreaction probably didn't need to do that.
100%.
And just don't even test John Moss, because John Moss gets excited about the fact that he gets to make a call he didn't have to guess at.
Yeah, true. And I know you mentioned before Schnaglen in that part, but for me, I don't think I want to see that partnership of Jim Amin and Schneiderlin again, because when I was doing the 5 things we learned from the game article a while back, I was just thinking it was like the equivalent of those dreams where, you know, when you're trying to throw punches to attack, but everything's just too slow and you're not causing any real damage. Like, and that kind of attributes to the pointer that we're just not creating anything from the centre of midfield. So it's just too defensive minded. And although I've got a hell of a lot of respect for the, you know, players in those positions, Gundogan, Xabi Alonso, those type of players, you've got to pick the right partner for them.
Yeah, and let's get into that. That was my next point. We had debuts for Bama.
Mm-hmm.
Gbamin. Let's just say it every way we possibly can, because he said like several different ways is fine. We had a debut for him, and I have to give him some respect for the fact that he flat out said, no, I'm not ready. He's like, I've only had 3 training sessions. I'm not ready. And he came in because we needed him. So we had a debut for him, and we had a debut for Moise Kean, who for some reason I keep hearing Moise Kean from commentators. And I'm just like, dude, we did a video. Like, if you look at the Everton site, they did a video where he says, this is how to say my name.
Yeah.
All right. How hard is it? Just to, anyway, it's like this much research, you know. Anyway, so how do we feel like those debuts went, Terry?
Well, Gbamin's was a bit of a horror show, and it's not his fault, and I feel really bad for him, because obviously the more, you know, reactionary, you know, cry-arsy corners of our fan base, you know, made a bit of, you know, a few snap judgments on him. And I think a lot of that was frustration at the lack of, you know, not getting the win. And it was taken out a little bit on him. He was very poor, but you could play. I'm sure with 1 week of training, if that, like half a week's worth of training after a holiday in a new club, in a new league, throw Kevin De Bruyne in that position, in that situation, and he's not going to excel. Like, what do you, like, it was harsh on Gbamin to even put him on. I mean, I think Silva should have put Davies on just for the experience, but I can see why, because he knows when Andre Gomez is leaving the pitch that he's probably thinking, I need to use Gbamin sooner than I expected, so I might as well get him on the pitch now and see how he does, and, you know, get him some minutes under his belt. It's not really worked. I don't think he was as bad as people said. He did get caught by the pace a little bit, but, you know, what else was he meant to do? It's hard for players with a full pre-season who are new to the Premier League to come in and adapt to the pace. It's really fast compared to other leagues. So he kept getting caught out on the ball because he thought he had more time to pick his pass. It was a steep learning curve. You'd think he'll be like that against Watford if he starts. I don't. I think he'll know, like, whoo, need to release this ball a lot quicker when I'm on the pitch in this league. Moise Kean, nothing you can really say about his debut. Came on, a few nice touches. That was it, really. He wasn't on the pitch very long to make it, you know, a big impact. Again, I'm not expecting big things from him straight away. He is a teenager. He's new to the country, league. He's got less experience, you know, less games than Gbamin. I'm with Silver on this one. Like, you know, so don't rush this player in, because this is what a lot of clubs who sign, you know, these star name youngsters do. They throw them straight in and go on, show us why everyone thinks you're great. And then, you know, they struggle a little bit, and then everyone turns on them and destroys their confidence, going, oh, he's a myth. He's not as good as people said he was. And honestly, I would be happy for him to come on slowly and in substitute appearances for a few more weeks before we start seeing him start, because we bought our new star striker. There's no rush. It's not like in the past where we had to play them. Like, we've got other players who can play in those positions. We can still win games without Moise Kean. I want him brought into the team, right?
Max, anything on that?
No, both those, you know, aforementioned signings, both really young. Gbamin's only 23, Moise Kean's only 19, and in particular on Gbamin, I think he'll come good. I've got you know, I've got a likeness to players that come over from the Bundesliga. I think they've experienced football in a really good environment to experience football in. And if you think back to some of the transfers, like Ballack coming to England, Kompany coming to England, Mertesacker, like loads of the players that come over from the Bundesliga eventually settle. So as Terry mentioned, those that are blowing the top straight away just calm down.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Gbamin. I go through every pronunciation when I'm about to say his name. I'm just gonna have to settle on something. I don't think it was as bad as some made out. I thought it got worse as the game went on, as you know, because his passing early on, it was usually on point. It was, you know, he was putting it to players' feet, which is cool. But as it went on, he was having to make quicker decisions. He had less time to make decisions, and he started passing the ball and giving it away. That was frustrating. I saw one time where I think Meyer got the ball on the left side, and Gbamin had a choice of going toward the Meyer was on the flank, but he didn't have the ball. The ball had gone to the center, and we had both of our center backs in the center of the pitch, and Gbamin chose to go with the ball instead of going with, I think, Benteke is who had the ball. And Gbamin went to the ball, Benteke passed it to Meyer, and Gbamin would have done better to actually cover that side rather than pile on and ball watch. You know what I mean? And that's what gave them their best opportunity, you know? And it's just a matter of him being able to communicate better, him knowing his role better, knowing his responsibilities better. You know, these are things that are going to come. You know, he's going to get used to the speed of the game and all that. He's a big dude. He's athletic. I do think his passing is good enough for that position. I think that'll be fine. And I think we're going to see him getting around the pitch a lot more and intercepting more, tackling more. He just seems like he likes that part of the game.
Yeah.
I think he said that he likes that part of the game.
Actually. Yeah, of course. And I think he's filling the shoes of someone that rivaled only in goal little Kante for like tackling and interception stats. Yeah. So, you know, be patient.
Yeah.
I don't think that comparison helps him either. He's not an...
No, 100%.
He's a Morgan Schneiderlin, he's a Gareth Barry, he's an Nemanja Matic, he's not a Kante, he's not a McCarthy, he's not an Idrissa Gueye. He isn't going to charge all over the midfield, just tackling everyone. He's going to sit, he's going to be a traditional like number six, he's going to slot between the two centre-backs. I think if he was sort of compared to Schneiderlin, people would have a different expectation of him and a different, you know, better idea of what he's going to be. When we've not like-for-like replaced Idrissa Gueye, because what's the point? You can't. If there was a player who was as good as Idrissa Gueye out there, PSG would have signed him instead. Like, so we've gone for a more, you know, structured number six with silver legs, which he had at Watford, and we're going to build a different like formula in midfield over that. So I think people need to understand that he's not going to be Idrissa Gueye 2.0. He's going to replace Schneiderlin, and he's competing with Schneiderlin for that spot in the squad.
Yeah, and also a word about Idrissa Gueye. He'd had a year worth of Premier League experience. He had already done all. He had had 1 year's worth of understanding the speed of the game and the physicality of the game before he even came to us. So, yeah, you know what I mean? It's not a fair comparison. Regardless, one last bit, because I saw a lot of people commenting on DCL. What are our thoughts on DCL? Because I'm curious, and this is the last thing I'm going to talk about, although I have all this other stuff. We just got to move on. Max, any thoughts on DCL? How do you feel like he did?
As you say, like, he is obviously, you know, a point of contention. Obviously, that shift to that number nine shirt, it does just have some sort of symbolic resonance. You know, you go back to, you know, Dixie being the first ever number nine, Graham Sharp, so that weight can't be ignored. Like, it is pressure. He's obviously embraced that. He wanted the number nine shirt. So, I go back to that Merseyside derby, that 0-0, when he came up against Virgil van Dijk. Van Dijk had the better of him in every single aspect, but he didn't give up, and he worked his ass off to, like, until he was taken off, and he was absolutely shattered. From then on, we saw a different version of him, and we still saw that battling, willing to run centre forward. He was holding the ball up really well against the Crystal Palace back line. Obviously, as Terry mentioned, we've got to take our time with the likes of Keane, although we want to see him burst on the scene and become some sort of superstar. if DCL's place for the moment.
Mm-hmm. Terry, thoughts on DCL?
If Moyes Keane settles like we want him to, and he, you know, he becomes this, you know, quality player, I think we'll start to appreciate DCL in a different way. Right now, because he's our only, you know, well, until Keane's come in, he's our only proper striker, you know, with all due respect to Cheng Tosin. People want him to be all things to all people. You know, he isn't that. I think we'll come to realise, if Keane, you know, takes off, that DCL's got his pluses, and, you know, that game against Palace was the wrong game, wrong opponent for the wrong player. Like, if we played Chelsea or Arsenal away on the first day, DCL would have been perfect, because he's better when he's playing that sort of counter-attacking, you know, role where he's going to have to work the centre-backs like he did against Liverpool at Goodison. When he's sitting against the low block, he's not skillful enough to make his own chances in the box, and that's just something that is a fact about him. I think he's a good player. I think he's a very useful player. But we want him to do everything. We want him to, you know, if he could do everything, if he could finish, he could work like that, he'd be Harry Kane. There's just no... People need to understand just because he's been around a long time doesn't mean he's not a young player with some development to do. He's got better every year that he's been here. I couldn't stand him at one point. I didn't see what people saw in him. I was like, when Ronald Koeman was playing him on the left, I was like, what does Koeman see in this Calvert-Lewin? And then every year he's just improved and improved. And in, you know, rocky circumstances as well, he was the only striker under Koeman when we sold Lukaku, and he wasn't ready for that. You know, but he made the best of it. You know, he was flogged by Sam Allardyce, and only since Silva's come in has his development really, you know, calmed down and gone to a proper track. But if Keane settles and does well, I think the two of them together will be two very different and very useful options, depending on the opposition. And even occasionally, you know, you might see DCL come off the bench and play up front with them and complement each other. But right now, people want DCL, especially with the number nine on his back. I mean, I don't agree with it, but the number nine comes with not just an expectation of goals, but an expectation of style. I think people want the number nine to be Duncan Ferguson. I think they want him to bully everyone. And he could certainly work on his aggression. He could certainly be a little bit more competitive in the box, but he isn't Duncan Ferguson. He's not going to bully opposition strikers. He's not that type of player.
I mean, his hold-up play is so good. It was so good on Saturday. I mean, it was really strong. He was holding off stronger defenders. You know, he's a bigger kid than I think I realized. You know what I mean? When you actually see him out there, he's quick. He's skilled. I saw him make some very clever little layoffs. I thought he made some combinations. His press defense is so good. I'm vexed by DCL because he literally does everything except score goals. If we're winning games without him scoring a bunch of goals, but just because of all the things he's doing, I'm going to end up being okay if we're winning, you know? It's weird though, because he's a nine. I feel like the goals are going to come. I think they're going to come. But Terry, you mentioned something I thought was really, really apt in terms of the fact that he can't make his own chances very often. And he's going to have to work on being able to, because when we get into those games that we play, like we play against Palace, where they are just packing back and we're just hitting the flanks and crossing the ball in, he's got to figure out a way to be able to bully off those defenders and actually win those headers and put them down, you know, because he's not. He's doing that thing where he kind of gets under it and it sails over. He's not actually, he's not quite getting the position he needs to be able to win those. And I don't know if Keane's going to be able to do it either. We'll see. He's a strong kid too. I don't really know though. But that's kind of the explanation for our lack of goals against some of these teams that play on those, you know, play so far back. I don't know. I can't say he's been clinical. I can't lately. I think for a little while there, I thought he was a clinical finisher, but I feel like he's got a little hump. He's been focused on so many other things, but I think the goals are going to come for him. I really do. I'm not worried. I think it'll be okay. I'm curious as to what Iwobi does in terms of bringing a little bit more options. You know what I mean? Like, put another option in there with whom DCL can combine. You know what I mean? Some combination play coming through the middle. We'll see. I don't know. All right, that's it. This has been way longer than expected. I guess it's just we haven't seen each other in a while. It happens. So let's any parting thoughts on that?
Good to be back.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe I'll actually get to see this weekend's match in real time instead of watching 20 minutes at a time on NBC Gold. So that's it for Palace Thoughts. We're going to talk a little squad assessment. We were trying to figure out, I know me and Toffee Blues John were trying to figure out what segments to do, and we were talking about, should we talk about our strengths? Should we talk about transfers? Should we talk about our weaknesses? And it was like, well, it all falls into squad assessment, doesn't it? You know, to really kind of look at what we have post-window, right? So that's what we're going to start with. We're going to go through all the different positions and kind of assess whether or not it's a weak spot, a strength, or if it's just kind of meh. And I think you're going to see that, a lot of meh.
Mm. Yeah,
which is fine. I'm okay with meh. So, Terry, how you feeling about our keeper depth? Pickford, Losel, and I guess I got to throw Steck in there.
I mean, it's as good as it's ever going to be, isn't it? I mean, I can't see, unless we're in the Champions League, I couldn't see a case where you have two, you know, potential first choice keepers. It's usually one established fit. In fact, even most of the Champions League clubs in this league don't have that. I think Man United are the only ones who've got two quality keepers, and everyone else has got like a established number one with like a decent number two. And I think that's what we've gone out and done. I think we realised last season that Stekelenburg isn't really a very good option to come in. If Pickford goes down with like an injury or something like that, or gets a red card for a moment of madness, you wouldn't want Stekelenburg starting any games. Losel or Lazel, or however you say it, he's, you know, not as good as Pickford, but he's better than Stekelenburg. So it was an upgrade in that position, so I'm pretty happy.
I also am good with this depth. I thought Losel was a nice signing to get a backup keep on the free.
Yeah,
I'm good with that. Max, you good with it?
Yeah. I'm good with it. Like, just to cover the entire assessment, like, I do, like, similar to you, Jerry, I endorse Pep Guardiola that you need to have two really good players to keep competition healthy in each position. But I just feel like it's a huge pain in the backside that your utility player who you just bring in gets injured straight in pre-season. Like, you bring in Fabian Delph, a player that Pep Guardiola has utilised several times, and, you know, it's a good example of that, having a player of higher enough quality to challenge in more than one position, and he's the one that's on the sideline straight away. But I don't think we haven't got a good enough squad to crack the top six just yet. I think we'll have to wait till January or maybe even the summer after. But we are on the right track.
Get us into right.
Dipping to the end there. You didn't have to speak about the keepers, not the end.
I know, apologies. I have literally got like the entire squad listed down in front of me. I know you've got one better than that. You've got like an accurate updated document. But I don't know. I just don't think it's good enough, and I feel like it's got to be known.
So, just a reminder, Max does not take normal questions. He answers and says what he needs to say. All right. Actually, that's the kind of thing, like, that's a pretty solid, like, introductory statement, Max. Get us into right back, though. Coleman, Sidibe, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which I don't think I am. And I think you have to throw Holdgate as part of our depth there as well.
I'm Martina.
Did you say Kyle Martino?
No, but he's in there.
I've got the four, the four horsemen of the apocalypse: Morales, Martina, Bolasi, and Nias, written on the side because I can't, man.
You've got to include them.
No way.
But bringing in Tadebe made me it lifted my spirits and outlook on the entire transfer window, to be honest. Like, maybe it was just Everton, like, absolutely hitting the nail on the head with the announcements of the transfers, like, playing into the fact that we want to build on this some sort of ambition, where he said, I became a champion with Monaco, I conquered the world with my country, and I like Everton's ambition. Although he is only on a season-long loan, finally we've got that cover at right-back, which was much needed, like, against Palace. Although Coleman was pressing high, and he was having some success earlier on in the game, his impact waned as the game went on, which is to be expected. So I think, you know, you go back to last season, you see, I think Baines even started that first games against Wolves, and then Dean, when called upon, and even sets the bar and makes the place his own. I wouldn't be surprised to see that going forward. Maybe not as successfully as Dean, but I'd just like to reinforce, I'm quite happy at right back.
Yeah, I'm with you. And right now, Coleman was all right. Yeah, I actually saw him play a really nice ball across in the first half, and I was like, "Whoa, that was a decent service." Because with Coleman last year, I got to the point where I was like, "Come on, man, just get it anywhere near a player, dude, please." But I thought he looked good, and he took on Zaha man to man late in the game, and he looked solid. What I like about Sidibe is the idea of somebody to share the load. You know, like in Lord of the Rings, share the load, all right? And that right there, that's what I think he's gonna do. So, and I think it's cool because he had a pretty bad injury. So let's not have him play every game as soon as he comes into the team. That would be great. Gradually build him in. Terry, you good at right back?
Yeah, I said a few times last season that we need a right back Luca Dean type signing to come in now. Sidibe's probably, you know, not quite the same as that, because let's be honest, Coleman is not in the position that Baines was in last summer, where he's, you know, he's a lot older and he's winding down and he's about ready to be a number, you know, two choice. Don't think Coleman's quite at that point, but John Joe Kenny is highly thought of, as he is by the club and by a lot of Everton fans. He is very much a youth player who's understudying a senior player. He's not real competition in the strict sense of the word. He may come back and be that because he's had a year on loan in the Bundesliga, but I think Sidibe, who's obviously got a good pedigree, he's won the World Cup, he's played in, you know, in Monaco and what have you, he's actual competition. He's a viable threat. If Coleman has a spell of bad games or makes some game-costing mistakes and Sidibe comes in, he might not get the shirt back the same way Baines did from Dean. Though it's nice to have an actual, you know, some actual competition in that spot. Coleman's shirt, obviously at the minute, he's the new captain, but he's less safe than he's ever been now since he's been the right back at the club, because this is the strongest competition he's had.
I think he gets that. I think that's why we saw such a strong performance from him. You know, but at the same time, I don't know if what I just said is fair to Coleman, because he's a strong character. I feel like he came into this season, he would have come out just playing guts out anyway. Maybe that's the more fair statement, you know, and maybe the reason he wasn't given everything he could last season, because he's just getting older and he can't go game in, game out for that long a stretch anymore. But the idea of having both those guys, I feel great. And if for some reason neither one is able to play, Holgate is a solid third option. All right, so I feel good at right back as well. Keeper and right back. Let's go to left back. Terry, Luca Dean, Leighton Baines. I guess you got to throw young Gibson in there as a possible third choice if you need to.
He's right? Center off.
I know that's his best position, but he still plays left, correct?
Mm. Much in the same way Colgate.
Exactly.
Like sort of defender, yeah, in times of emergency. But I think left,
because we don't have any other left back that would be in front in between those two, right?
Yeah, but when you're not in Europe, I don't think you need more than two players in each position, because, you know, let's be honest, you're going to be playing mostly one game a week, the odd midweek game in December and whatnot. Same again at left back as last season. You know, we've got the Premier League's best left back and the Premier League's former best left back as his cover. This one's a little bit more clear cut in first choice and second choice than some other positions, but we're pretty well stacked in that position, because Baines, if, you know, Luka Dean goes down with an injury and you see Leighton Baines coming off the bench, I'm not worried at all. I'm just like,
yeah, I'm not either.
I definitely prefer Dean because of the time in the career of both players, and I think he's a better player now, but not to worry about with Leighton Baines. That's why he's been given the contract extension that he was. It's a solid player to have in that sort of role where he can come in and be a steady hand if needed.
Yeah, I always go at least three deep on these positions, guys. Always, unless it's something where we don't. Like, so I don't know any other player that's on our roster, though, that would be after Baines. And I always worry about the worst-case scenario.
Yeah.
Every time. Like, even if typically you don't use them, I always look at it. Because I feel like we end up seeing some nightmare scenario at least once a year at one of our positions. Like, every year.
So it's like two players for each position and, like, one auxiliary player who's played somewhere else.
Right there. Exactly. That's exactly what I mean. Totally. Because we're about to talk about that kind of situation at center back in just a second as well. All right. Yeah. So you feeling all right about left back as well, Max?
This stuff is all, isn't it?
Cool. Center backs. Michael Keane, Yerry Mina, Mason Holgate. And then there's a gray area. You got to mention Bama, all right? You got to mention Gbamin, because he has played some minutes at center back, so he can back up. And you got to mention a couple of the U23s in Gibson and Feeney. To me, when you get past three players who center back is their best position, three senior players, that's thin. Max, how are you feeling about centre-back depth?
Yeah, I agree with that. One of the best balances of that I think I've seen in recent years is when we had Jags, Distan and Stones. It was just like a really good blend and balance to have in terms of your centre-back options that all work relatively well in partnerships. I, to this day, still long for that ball-playing centre-half to come back into our team. But I was reassured by the performance against Crystal Palace. You know, Yerry Mina really looked solid. That partnership was Keane was there. Didn't seem to be any kind of miscommunications of any sort. And I'd just like to reinforce just how stupid that hashtag free Zuma thing was on Twitter.
Max does not suffer foolishness, everyone. I just wanna put that out there. No. I'll be honest though, I genuinely did want to free Zuma.
I did, but at the same time, you know, you just have to cut your losses. That you know, he didn't have the performance of his life against Man United. Actually, quite the opposite. So
it didn't go well. It didn't go well for Kurt.
The part I didn't like was free, you know, free player type, you know, things like hashtag free player X usually follows a player asking to leave, and then not. Zuma didn't actually say he wanted to leave. Might as well have been happy to give us Zuma.
We were told that he said that he wanted to leave, but he didn't put in a transfer request.
Yeah, so. The best example of that I think I saw was when Kagawa went to Man United and just ended up as being somewhat of a loose part, and went in Dortmund kind of launched the campaign to get him back and did successfully. I think they even launched the video with him like escaping a jail or something like that. So that was one of the only times I'll actually say that was well done.
Really quick, I need to mention Delph. If Delph's healthy, that is possible left back depth. That's something I should have mentioned, just dawned on me. He would be our third left back rather than Young Gibson, probably.
Yeah. So
that is solid depth and someone who has experience at a senior club doing that. So I should have mentioned that earlier. And I didn't because I forgot to write it down. Hey. So anyway, by the way, it just occurred to me for people who are listening, you can't see this, but Terry looks as though he's the representative from heaven. Max looks as though he has literally emerged from darkness. So just
it's like cinematography from The Godfather. There's a heavy use of shadow, Jerry. You should know this.
Yeah, nice. it's just great though. It's like I get commentary from both sides. we're always concerned about injuries, especially, you know, thinking about Yerry Mina. we're worried about that and the fact that we're a bit thin at the position. We're nervous about that. I think we agree center back depth is one of our weaknesses as a squad. Okay?
The thing is, though, that this sort of, like, you know, thin, you know, area of the squad is not specific to us. Like, we're a little bit more nervous because one of our two senior centre-backs got injured a lot last year. If Yeremina was on loan and we couldn't get him back and it was just Zouma and Keane who were here, you wouldn't be as worried because Zouma didn't get injured last season and neither did Keane. Mm-hmm. Not very. If they did, it wasn't any that I remember. It's just because Mina did a lot, so you're thinking, oh, it's very, you know, is it likely that he's going to go again? But if you look around the Premier League, other clubs are actually rolling really light in some positions. Like Liverpool are going to sell Dejan Lovren, it came out today. That would leave them in the exact position we are with three centre-backs and a midfielder who can sort of fill in. Like they've got Fabinho, we've got Gbamon. Man United are the same, but not with centre-backs. They've got about a million centre-backs, but up front, they've got two players. Mm-hmm. As their centre-forward, they've got Martial and Rashford. I mean, we suppose we can count Sanchez, but they don't, so why should we? If they get an injury to one of their centre-forwards, they've literally got one centre-forward, and then they're starting to draft players in from other positions to fill it. Mm. It's not specific to Everton. A lot of clubs now seem to be, you know, rolling with a light area of the squad, and the only problem we've got is one of our two senior ones is not, you know, so the nails aren't to be fit long term. But if I think some other clubs might, you know, if they're unlucky, might have some problems this year, because Liverpool, who were brought up then, they've also not got any senior cover at fullback either, which we have.
Mm-hmm.
True. So
they've got five senior defenders in the whole squad and the rest of the kids.
But to the credit, and I suppose, you know, makes sense as we're moving on to the midfielders, I think they've picked their squad, you know, their utility players exceptionally well in, you know, the likes of Sheridan, Shaqiri, James Milner, you know, paid dividends with them winning the Champions League. Like those type of players, you contrast it to us, where we, you know, we brought Delph in straight away on the shelf. Everton look, I suppose, but we're not too bad in the field, are we?
Yeah, I suppose that's a good comparison because, you know, they've got five senior defenders, but they've also got midfielders who can cover. We're the same. We've got a defensive mid who can play centre-back in Gbamon. They've got Milner, we've got Delph who can cover at both full-back and, you know, whatnot. So yeah, I suppose it's not as risky as people think.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got to be lucky, and that means that we're not going to be, because let's be honest, it's Evan.
All right, so by the way, for people listening, if you're hearing a little bit of sound imperfection, it sounds like Terry and Max are cyborgs. They are not. It is, I am at the beach and I don't have the best connection. So, yeah, apologies for that. Now that Terry has convinced us all that we're fine at center back, honestly, it's something I didn't really realize, by the way, that other squads were doing that, going light. So, anyway, let's go center mid, talk about center mids. Andre Gomez, and this is not putting them into separate categories. This is literally just the center mids, okay? Gomez, Schneiderlin, Gbamon, Delph, Davies. Any others right now?
Beningame.
That could possibly play? Beningame technically is part of the depth. Technically, he is technically.
Depending on your formation, Sigurdsson, I'd count him as one of the midfielders.
And that's the thing. Like that center, but only because Sigurdsson is like a second striker so often. You know what I mean? Like the way he, as far forward as he ends up getting. I don't know, but that's the problem with labeling these. But Terry, to be fair, I did say center mids. So, but just know I've got a different category. As in, like you're right. But center attacking mids, I've got those in a different category. So that's the only one I labeled separately. So as far as those two, because, you know, we like to play that 4-2-3-1.
Mm.
The players that could play one of those two, Gomez, Delph, both hurt, Schneiderlin red carded, Gbamon and Davies, and if you count Beningame. That's not the best situation to be in.
Yep, we're in the defense straight away, aren't we, really?
Mm-hmm. And that already we have to all agree that probably makes it a little bit of a light spot for us, no?
No, I don't particularly agree. I think how often throughout the season are you going to have, you know, three absentees all at the same time? You've got two injuries, one suspension, all in the one position technically. That's not something that will happen a lot. I hope not. Plus, it's only compounded by the fact that it's happened on the first game. If this happens in, like, November or February when Gabamon is settled, you won't be as worried. It's only now because you can only half count Gabamon because he's new to the league and he's had a pretty ropey first game. I think we're fine there personally. I think this is an extreme scenario we're in with three players missing and one who's just arrived at the club. We won't be like that at any other point in the season, I hope.
So, see, I say this because we weren't able to get Decore, you know. And the idea there is if we had a Decore type of player, then this particular situation, it's like, I don't know, I don't clench my butt cheeks as much. You know what I mean?
I wasn't too fussed on missing out on Decore. It's just the injuries you're on.
I mean, that type of player as well.
Andre Gomez's injury is the thing that just kind of got me worried now, because we saw how we kind of capitulated in the second half once he went off injured, and there was that, you know, Schneiderlin went off and there was that big gap to fill in the field, and just no one could do it adequately. We don't genuinely tend to be productive with an attacking output from that area of the pitch, and it seemed like, you know, we're going to ride that 4-2-3-1 till the end of time. I feel like we need to move away from it and, you know, become something else, but time will tell.
Well, we became a little something different when we got the red card. We became like a 4-4-1. Just, you know, is that? And I was just like, well, this is weird. But it seemed like that's what needed to happen, and we still looked strong. Not strong to the point of scoring goals, but still okay.
Ironically, I think Gomez is the most irreplaceable player in the whole squad. Like, although we've got a lot of centre midfielders, other players in the squad, they've got like-for-like players who come in. We've got other midfielders who could come in for Gomez, but how many other players have we got who will run the game like him? He's the heart of the team. Might not always get the assists or the goals, but the whole team is based around his passing. So let me put it this way as well, with the people are worried about, you know, the midfield scenario. Say Idrissa Gueye hadn't left and we didn't get Gabamon. If we were going into Watford with Gueye, Davies and Sigurdsson, would you be worried? I wouldn't. Because you know what you're going to get, whereas we're only really worried about the game because we've seen Gabamon come in and not really, you know, take off. Not, you know, we've covered that in the previous segment, not really his fault. But I think the worries have come from the fact that Gabamon might not be ready. If it was Gueye, Davies and Sigurdsson, you'd be like, okay, so we're missing Gomez, but, you know, Davies left to play. It's just the unknown quantity of Gabamon at this age, which is the problem. It's not.
And Terry, you did say don't compare Gabamon to Gueye, and that they're different players, and that we can't, you know, because that doesn't help the fella, right?
The three missing players are compounded by the fact that one of the remaining midfielders is a bit of an unknown quantity about whether he's going to be able to do it in this early stage. If we still had a familiar centre midfielder, say Gabamon got sent off, not Schneiderlin, you wouldn't feel as bad. It's just the fact that of the two midfielders we've got left for this game, one of them, it's come too soon for him. It's. I think, you know, bodies wise, and we're fine in centre midfield. It's just the one player we could have done with not starting is having to start, or might have to start.
And I think a lot of us wouldn't want to say let's start Davies either, right?
In an ideal,
that wouldn't be our preference at this time yet. Anyway, I think we'd be okay if he was, you know, because. Davies was talking about how he wants to start a little bit more and play farther up. So I think lately he's been kind of going in for Sigurdsson and dropping back more and kind of playing not really as that second striker, but as more of a center mid. But yeah, I don't know. I would still be a little bit concerned if that was our three, but Sigurdsson and an Idrissa Gueye, I would feel more comfortable. You're right, Terry. It is a little bit of a inexperience with Gbamine that gets you worried. But it's the kind of inexperience that could take a while.
Yeah.
Could. So yeah. I don't know. I think he's going to be fine. But you just never know as far as development goes, because it's a lot of it seemed like it was composure. You know. So we'll see. Good talk, guys. All right. So center attacking mid. Sigurdsson, Davies, Iwobi. You have to throw Bernard in there just in case, because he may get some minutes there. I'm not going to. Yeah, the four horsemen I'm leaving on the periphery right now, not the wrestlers. So anybody else that could possibly play that kind of center attacking mid role?
I mean, it's
besides. Oh yeah, I said Davies, right? Yeah,
I did. Yeah, but it is Sigurdsson's number 10 share to lose, isn't it, really? I think we're at a point now where it's almost as if it's almost like utility attacking players, where, you know, there's no cemented position for them on the field. They've just got to go out there and make it their own, really. Because it's been mentioned, you know, since he came to the club, that, you know, Iwobi can be his youth in that second striker role. But it remains to be seen.
Yeah, you missed it, Jerry, but I shook my head when you said Bernard. His whole career, he's played like 12 games there. People were hard to make Bernard a number 10. He isn't. People did this with Pienaar. He was class on the left. And because he was class on the left, people wanted him to be a number 10, because he'd do it occasionally for his national team, South Africa. I think it's a straight fight between Iwobi and Sigurdsson. I think Davies, and, you know, in a pinch, he'll go there, but he's more of a utility, you know, around all the central positions midfielder. But if Sigurdsson gets injured, I don't think you see Davies start. I think Iwobi will come in there, and that was sort of what he's been brought in for, to give competition to both the wingers and Sigurdsson, because whilst the wingers, the wide players like Bernard and Richarlison have got competition already, and, you know, Sigurdsson's got none at all. I mean, he needed to sort of tick a couple of boxes with that sign, and needed someone who could, you know, really test a few of his established names. Because if Iwobi had been fit at the weekend, say we bought him earlier in the summer and he was on the bench, he would have been on promptly for either Sigurdsson or Bernard, because both of them were not up to scratch against Palace.
Yeah, only reason I mentioned Bernard there is I saw some people on Twitter were saying that he was actually getting some training at that position, you know, during practice. Yeah, and the idea of just giving him some extra added minutes there. So I put him in there as like the fourth option. I don't think he's going to get a lot of minutes there. Our wings. All right. Basically, they're the same players, except for one has Walcott. All right. We have basically the exact same options on either wing. And I don't really think that Bernard's going to get many minutes on the right wing or right forward, but I've thrown him in there as a possibility. But on the right, Richarlison, Walcott, Iwobi, Bernard. And on the left, Bernard, Richarlison, Iwobi. Yeah. And that's all pretty. And I just don't see Walcott playing much on the left. Yeah, and I don't see Bolasie or Morales getting any time. So, but technically,
an issue that is all right for the players.
Yep, and that's what Terry brought up last time about how we were wanting to get a left-footed, you know, winger in, and we didn't. So, yeah. Oh well, what do you do there? But there are a lot of different types of players there, right? You know. A lot of them, like Bernard's not like any of the other players, really. You know, he's more of a small, skilled player, not really going to get the goals from him, which having Iwobi and being able to plug Iwobi in there if we need a goal late may be a good idea, but I think he's going to be starting a decent amount of games moving forward once he actually gets the time. Gosh, our signal's awful here, guys. Sorry, I keep losing you guys and going away. It's really distracting. So we feel good about our wing depth, because we need to move on and get this video done. Okay. And I've totally lost Terry's picture completely, by the way. Center forwards, DCL, Moise Kean, Richarlison, Cenk Tosun. Anybody else that could possibly plug in there? Maybe Iwobi if he had to? I don't know. Not really.
No. Oh, is Niass off, by the way? Turkey?
I hope so.
I have no idea. I think the
four horsemen will all be gone. You know, like Morales, Bolasie, Niass and Martina. Because let's be honest, they've been given squad numbers that are just indicative of their standing in the squad. They've been given high, you know, 20s, 30s number, early 30s numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them are out of contract next year. They'll be getting the old Ashley Williams loan, like a few others got, where they'll go and not come back. Bolasie probably, I mean, hopefully he's sold. It's the players that Jerry mentioned, really, as the options. Let's be honest, you're not going to see Niass playing an Everton shirt.
I don't think so. But yeah, that is that's pretty much the entire squad depth, though. That's all of it. So gone through all of it. I think I have some issues with center back and center mid feeling a little thin for me. I feel okay about the most of it, but I don't like the fact we don't have a left-footed winger like at all. That's a little that's where I'm feeling. You guys, I know Terry, you have less concerns about kind of being a little thin at a couple of those. And Max, I don't really know what you're thinking. I think you're probably in between me and Terry.
Yeah, I suppose. As I just reinforce, I still don't quite think it's good enough yet to crack that top six. But, you know, we've got years ahead.
So I guess that's it for a squad assessment. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for If You Know Your History, the Everton-based quiz segment that pits Max against Terry in a cage match of Toffee's Wit and Might. Hey, I survived it. All right, so guys, we're going to do a penalty shootout quiz. I've got a note card here with questions and answers that John has sent me. Webmaster John, Toffee Blues John, whatever you want to call him. Call him Phil, if you like. So what we're going to do is I'm going to be going I'm going to flip. I don't have a coin because I'm at the beach, and beach doesn't allow coins. So I'm going to be using this hat, and I'm going to be flipping this hat. And people who are listening via podcast, which that's all you are, I assure you the hat is fabulous. So I'm going to be flipping it, and whoever gets to go first, it's going to be like they're shooting in a penalty shootout, and the other person, it's like they're blocking. So we'll have best of five type of scenario, I believe. 10 total questions. All right. So Max, since it's been a while since you've been on, I'm going to have you call it heads, tails. Call it in the air, please. Yeah, it's such foolishness. All right, ready?
Heads.
It is tails.
Really?
I apologize. It landed like this. So, Terry, first or second, my friend?
Second, please.
All right. Max, Terry. All right. Max, your shot. How many appearances does Seamus Coleman have for Everton? Hold on. Cue intense quiz music. I should have said that earlier. Now go. How many appearances does Seamus Coleman have for Everton, Max?
Right, I seen him saying the other day when he was announced as captain that he doesn't want to be remembered as just another Everton player that made 300 appearances, so I'm going to go somewhere approximating around 300. I'll say like 315.
315, says Max. Terry?
325.
I would like to tell you both that you have overbid on this one. You're both over. And that's part of the game, too, if you haven't figured it out. It's a little bit Price is Right-ish. If you guess over, it's whoever gets the closest without guessing over. So, Max, shoot again.
Do I not get that awarded to me for being the lower option? No.
No, no. That's the new way, I've been told. It's the closest without going over, so you guess again.
308.
308, says Max. Terry. 301. I would like to tell you both, you have both gone over again. So, shoot again.
Exact 300
says Max.
289.
Actual retail price of Seamus Coleman. Appearances for Everton, 290. Terry gets the block.
Don't like this new format, I've got to be honest with you. It's like the equivalent of VAR. Kills it.
That's such a good point. That's such a good call, Max. apologies, Max. I don't make the rules. I am just your I'm just a host, man. So Terry, your shot. How many goals has Seamus Coleman scored for Everton, Terry?
12.
Terry says 12. Maximiliano.
The high goal scoring here, a little higher than 12. I remember Martin's his first season. Good output. 18.
Actual retail price, Seamus Coleman goal output is 26. 26. Max gets the block there. All right, Max. What's the total number? This is good luck to you guys on this. I'm sure y'all would be fine with it.
I didn't hear that before, would it?
No, I didn't actually ask the question yet. All right. I just think this is going to be. What's the total number if you add up Yannick Bolasie's Everton squad numbers?
Oh.
This is the thing you guys would be great at this, but I would be awful. Y'all are ace at this.
What was it, ring 14? I would have been able to tell you it was 5 or something. Oh, what is it? I haven't got a clue, to be honest with you. I'm going to go for like 7. What is he? Number 34.
Hold on. The total number, if you add up all of them. So you're supposed to add up the total. Okay?
Oh, of each squad number that he's had forever?
Yes. There are maths involved.
Okay. Why would you hit me with that?
I didn't. I'm just the dude with the card.
I don't know. I'm going to say like 52, because I think his new one's ridiculous, isn't it?
Okay. Max says 52. Terry?
31. Because he was 7. He's 31 now, so 38. He was 7, and he is now 31, so 38 is my answer.
Funny thing. He went from 14, that's what he started on,
yeah,
to 7.
He found his 14.
To 31. And do you know what that adds up to, gents? It adds up to 52. Which is what Max said. A total guess. And he got it right.
I thought in at number 7, I completely forgot he was 14.
Yeah. Max shot in the dark, literally, because you are in the dark. Yeah, that worked. Well done. Terry, how many appearances that you wanted to forget? How many appearances does Cuca Martina have for Everton?
Too many.
That is the right answer. No, I'm just kidding. It's
30
says Terry. 30. Max.
It's because he had that run, isn't it? I don't know. I think it might be a bit more. I mean, 33.
I'd like to tell you both you have overbid. Terry, go again.
26.
26 from Terry.
20.
Maxwell House.
24.
Actual retail price appearances for Cuca Martina. 28. Terry gets that one. All right, tied up. 1-1. Max. Li Wai-Fing wore what squad number at Everton?
Jesus Christ, I was probably about 4 years old. I do not know.
Probably 35 at the time.
I don't know. I'm going to say 33.
Terry, what do you got?
I did used to know this, and I forgot, so I'm going to go with 37 as a guess.
All right. It's weird telling you you both overbid because this is not the same type of, you know, but you have. Both of you are too high. So, go again.
27.
27 from Max. Terry?
Twenty-five.
And you both overbid again. Max?
23.
23 from Max?
22.
22, you've both overbid again.
Oh my God.
I'm not kidding.
What?
Max, what do you got?
19.
19 from Max.
20.
20 actual retail price of Li Wei Fing's squad number 21.
It's every number around that.
Terry gets the block, though. So, Terry, Johnny Huizenga got how many international caps for Holland while at Everton?
Oh, I hate these ones.
I just think all these are hard, I gotta be honest.
15. Are you in the Belka final, did you know? Carly, is it Evan? I'm gonna go for, I don't know, maybe a few more. Okay, 30.
Johnny Huizenga got 40 international caps for Holland. So Max with the block. Right now it's still 1-1 after three rounds. Let's see here. Max, it's your turn. How many yellow cards did Everton get last season?
Jesus Christ. I don't know. 30.
30. Terry?
40.
40. The actual amount is 59. Andre Gomez and Drissa Gueye were the highest with 7. All right. So that's Terry with the block. Terry, how many goals does Jink Tosun Basha have for Everton?
12.
12, says Terry. Max?
7.
7. Max with the block. Jink Tosun has 9 goals in 43 games. All right. This is turning into quite a rivalry. Max, how many appearances does 21-year-old Tom Davies have for Everton?
130.
130.
Sure,
says Max.
I've seen something saying he made his 100th appearance a while ago.
Terry.
94.
I would like to tell you both you have overbid. Max.
110.
Okay, that is a clever strategy. Terry?
I'm out of it, Jerry. This is going on way too long, this mate.
Me and Jerry both realised what you did there. But, go on. 71.
Yeah, Tom Davies has made 89 appearances for Everton. So that's Terry with the block. Terry, if you get this one, you know, it's yours. We'll see.
I'm still laughing at your face when he said you've both overbid, and then his next answer was higher than mine. Because you looked at him like, that's a good strategy.
Right now, Max, this is the equivalent of Max just turning around and kicking the penalty like the opposite direction. Just like, whatever, I have a life. All right, so Terry, Ademola Lookman, how many games did he play for Everton? It's too soon.
46.
46 from Terry. Max?
I don't know, 37.
37. Ademola Lookman played in 48 games. Terry, by a nose, guys. This was a really tight contest, so well done. Really well done. Oh, gosh. That's funny. Glad this is just a sound because the card on my GoPro is full. Terry, you as is your wont, and the spoils of war, you get to pick the old you get to pick the song we close out to. Everybody, Max needs to go. Say bye to Max. Bye, Max. Okay, see you later, man. Peace. Thanks.
Bye. All right. Good to talk.
Yeah, definitely, man. Take it easy. Terry, what are we wrangling out to?
He knew I was going to take a few minutes to have a look, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Give Me All Your Lovin' by ZZ Top.
More ZZ Top. Why are you picking more ZZ Top?
Just the beards, more than anything else. I'm struggling to come up with the spiel to let us use the song. Basically, I looked through my rotation for the last few days, and that was on there, and I thought, have I done ZZ Top? I have, but it was Sharp Dressed Man. So we're going to Forgive Me All Your Loving. And I'm going to come up with the ropiest reason ever, and that's because we're back at Goodison at the weekend, so we need to give them all our loving. We need to, you know, make a good atmosphere for the new players and show them why they're going to love being at Everton. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, Terry. I do. That's good. See, if I picked it, I was gonna. Earlier when I went for a run, I had The End by The Doors in my head, and I was like, the way some people reacted after that Palace draw, it was like they were already abandoning the entire season already. I'm like, calm down, everyone. It'll be okay.
You know what I should have done? I should have went for Jammin' by Bob Marley. So goodbye, man.
Yep. That's. However, I feel like a lot of people are talking about that one. So I think you're going a little different doing this ZZ Top, for real.
I
think
you're all right. You know, it's too off-brand for me, that, isn't it, really?
And every single person's reasons for picking ZZ Top for anything are beard-related. Mm-hmm. Every single one. Yeah, and so as we are you know, soothed by the soothing sounds of ZZ Top's beards, it's time to end Toffee Blues podcast. If you're if you've been listening but just haven't decided, if you fear commitment, let me ease you toward the possibility of trying to subscribe to us. It's trust me, it's really okay. You know, it's just, you know, just a click. All right. Also, if you're like, gosh, I want to see their faces, check out our YouTube channel, will you? Because faces abound there. And you would also be able to like, be like, oh wow, Jerry's at the beach and he's wearing a hat right now. I put it on for the pod segment, so you wouldn't actually see that on the YouTube channel, but whatever. So if you want more Terry, check out Liverpool Echo Fanjury. He's doing a piece as soon as we get off here for that, so keep an eye out for that. Max is probably going to be showing up on the Echo podcast sometime soon, but he always will be on the Toffee Blues website, doing written analysis there. Also, just check out the Toffee Blues pod, you know, Toffee Blues website, all things Everton there. Lastly, follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's all I have. Terry, let's get out of here. I'm going to go enjoy the beach now with the family.
Yeah, man, take it easy. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks, buddy. You take care. Appreciate your time, man. And talk to you soon. Everybody else out there, much love to you. And yeah, don't sweat the draw. Bye.